Jay, now NBC announced they're pulling a plug on our show February 12th, Kev. February 12th.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Here's the amazing part. That is the exact date the Mayan calendar predicted we would go on to.
What is this? What do you think of this whole thing with the time slips and the time shifts and I guess differentiate between those two things to get back into the time discussion,
right.
And move away from genitals.
Darn it. time shifts are a completely different thing than time slips.
Yeah.
Time slips are kind of like missing time where you might lose track of a good chunk of time or you might have a disorientation, with time where, you know, something that should have just taken 10 minutes ended up taking hours. And there are a lot of cases that we found where people sort of walk into it, maybe a weird kind of fog.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they end up 500 miles down the road, and it's 10 hours later, where all they were doing was going up to the corner store. So they've had like a complete distortion of time. Missing time is a little different. Larry and I have both had missing time. Larry lost a couple of hours on an investigation. I lost a couple of hours driving on a freeway. And that's just where you sort of black out. And just, you know, when you become aware again, you've lost 2, 3, however many hours of time, and you can't account for it, and yet you were able to function during that time.
Used to happen to me all the time in college, but that was mostly from drinking.
Alcoholic blackouts are a little bit different.
I don't think alcohol and pot count.
Yeah.
But what I thought it was interesting about that part of the book was you talk about sort of the fog element of all this.
Yeah,
and
creepy.
What struck me maybe from that part of the book, and this goes back to my own hang-ups about the possibilities of physical time travel, mm-hmm. maybe at the end of the day, this is actually a lot simpler than we think.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe it just involves, which interestingly is what our next book is about, you know, these little shifts in our physiology that occur because of something in the environment. So if you have somebody, excuse me, who walks into this weird electrical fog, as it's been described by so many of the people that have had this happen, and they've got this time distortion that occurs. So basically what's happened is some kind of EM fluctuation or what have you in the environment in that particular location worked on their particular physiology,
right,
to send them 500 miles up the road, 6 hours into the future, when all they were doing was going to the corner store, which was 20 feet away.
Exactly.
And Jenny Randles, who I'm a huge fan of, she wrote a great book called Time Storms, where she just documents tons of these cases. And, you know, a lot of them involve UFO sightings, so there's always that question of, well, you know, is there an abduction aspect to this? But not always.
Yeah, I think that looking at the science aspect of it, it gets into sort of the idea we've talked about before with ghosts and everything. I think there has to be some kind of universal, like a mixture, like a bouillabaisse of factors that come together when this whole thing. You know, maybe it's physiology as well as environment and. Mm-hmm. And the actual time somehow, you know, maybe you can only time travel at 11:11 or something crazy like that, you know, who knows?
Right, and maybe in certain locations.
Right.
Maybe just not at every point on Earth, but these places that have long been known as paranormal hotspots or places of high strangeness, well, maybe there's a reason for that, and it is the interaction of the environment with your physiology if you happen to be standing there.
Exactly. Larry, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Maria, were you're thinking like along the lines of like ley lines or, you know?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, there seem to be places like a lot of England where this stuff happens more often. And it could be something seismic. It could be something, you know, electromagnetic. It could just be the lay of the land, so to speak. So it's not just ley lines. I think there's hot spots all over the place. These, you know, vortices and,
yeah.
Excuse my son there. And this is kind of what we're doing with our new project, The Grid, is trying to figure out, okay, well, what is going on in the environment
Right.
And what's going on in our bodies at the time that somebody sees a ghost or somebody has a UFO encounter or, you know, some kind of alternate shift in consciousness or has a psychic vision or can remote view. What's going on?
Yeah.
What is that soup like you talked about? What's the recipe?
Right, right. And that might be why science can't really unlock all this, because they're not really, like, looking at all the different factors at once or something like that.
Well, but yeah, because, I mean, you know, it's not stuff that you can prove, that you can do in a laboratory setting, because if it is related to the environment, it's only going to happen in particular locations.
Exactly.
And it's only going to happen with particular people, as we're finding out.
Right.
Now
reproducibility is really not conducive, I would say, to science taking that very seriously.
And that's a problem. I mean, how do we overcome that?
Now, what about this paradox of time travel that you didn't talk about in the book, I don't think, but I've seen it in other places. Where, let's say, like, you have the time machine, right? And it was like the TARDIS in
yeah.
Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And you set it for, you know, I don't know, 1985, right? Isn't just because the Earth is moving through space, and space is moving, and everything's moving, like, if I got in and moved, wouldn't I just pop into space? Like, because Earth is way far away? Like, how does the time machine stay grounded on the Earth?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, that is a good question.
Has anyone looked at that whole idea?
No, not really. That's a good question.
No.
Because that would be, I would think that would be a huge, I think in the book you mentioned that some dude had some crazy time travel, it was part of the conspiracy theories chapter where he was like, it takes a chunk of the Earth underneath it, like, because it sticks to it somehow, and maybe
that is so bizarre.
The only,
I mean,
you know, maybe he thought of the,
yeah,
of the paradox.
Exactly.
Right.
But there was an episode of Futurama where they can travel into the future, and it was
but
like,
you know,
that would never work because you would be out in space. You would not be able to stay on the Earth because it wouldn't be gone if you're stuck in one point.
But what it could be is that, you know, since the universe is accelerating, it's expanding outward, that maybe the device would have to go back in the direction towards the Big Bang or away from the acceleration. I'm kind of trying to verbalize, you know, if the universe is expanding outward,
mm-hmm.
and the arrow of time is following that expansion, the device would have to literally sort of backtrack where the Earth came from.
Right.
Does that make any sense in a spatial sense? I don't know.
I think so.
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
Larry, can you answer?
Larry, what do you
know? I really can't. No, I'm sitting here trying to think through the science aspect of it and think how to answer that, and I can't. I don't know. I mean,
because if you think of the light that we see from stars, those things are dead. They're long gone.
Yeah,
they're
millions of years ago.
Right.
Yeah, so it has to have something to do with that, with light, with our ability to observe light and going back in the other direction from where the expansion is going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's possible, because you would you'd suck some of the universal fabric along with you.
Yeah, you would think.
This time travel stuff.
And that's a good question. I mean, that really.
Mm-hmm. Well.
I'm gonna have to do some thinking on that.
Well, you know what? Actually, the other solution would be if you go through a time wormhole.
Well, yes. I was going to say that, but that really doesn't. I mean, that doesn't. In that specific scenario, that wouldn't really handle that, though.
Well,
I mean,
but if you're going from, say, the present in our universe and you want to go back to the past, you'd have to go back to the past in a parallel universe, right? To make that work. I mean, I would think that would be the only way around.
Yeah.
That problem. So you would go through literally a time wormhole.
Yeah.
And that's a theoretical thing that we wrote about and that is considered a serious theory, but again, you know, there's no proof. Nobody's ever done it physically.
Well, it's definitely, put that in your files for a future,
Yeah, but you know what?
Yeah.
It's questions like that that make me start to really think that maybe, again, we're really not meant to do certain things, you know,
yeah.
breach certain universal codes, if you will, because we'd screw up the whole universe.
Well, the other thing I was thinking is, you mentioned the theory of everything, and it's to combine these four forces into one
right.
overlying thing. I noticed that time wasn't included in the theory of everything. Is it just sort of considered a given or a constant?
I would think. I mean, I would think that that's, it's, if for, for a physicist to, you know, come up with the Holy Grail, you've got to include time.
Yeah.
How can you not if it's, if it's intertwined with space? You
right.
have to.
Marie, I just thought of something else, too.
Mm-hmm.
While we're sitting here just theorizing about stuff, what if, you know, what if it was possible? Say we have the ability to jump in our TARDIS or our DeLorean or whatever and go back in time. What if you went back before the Earth was created, before the universe or the galaxy was actually created? What if you went back way back?
To like the Big Bang?
Yeah, the before
pre-bang.
The Big Bang.
Ah.
Yeah, the pre-bang. Then,
pre-bang.
I mean, for that to even, for you to have the ability, I'm trying to think through the logistics of that. I mean,
remember the movie Altered States? He used what, ayahuasca and the isolation chamber, and he went back before the Big Bang. Do you remember that?
No, I've done that.
Oh, Larry, how could you not remember that movie?
No, I don't remember.
For what we're the work that we do, you must.
Come on,
I remember
exactly
the movie, but I don't remember. No. I remember the movie, Marie. I just don't remember going back before the Big Bang.
Well, he kind of went back to the fetus, and then just kept going back
remember
to
that.
The Big Bang, and then there was just the black void, and but he was experiencing
that was mental.
Mentally.
That was mental. I'm talking about physical.
Right.
I think that maybe you would physically like die. I think it would physically like crush whatever you were in or something, you know what I mean? It was something that, I don't know, would tear it apart.
According to some of the laws that we wrote about, you should never have been able to travel back in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd be going back to before there was any form. So how
right.
could you
how could you have created a time
back?
Machine that travel back in time? I mean, it's that huge paradox, that cyclical thing. I mean, there's just no way to answer it.
Yeah.
Time.
Ugh.
Preview.
It's too late to be thinking of stuff like this, by the way. Now I'm going to sleep tonight.
Oh, you poor thing.
You're going to be up all night wondering about these things.
Yeah.
I guess, do you think this is ever going to actually be possible, or do you think this is going to be a question that people will grapple with, you know, forever almost?
Oh, man, am
I torn
on that?
Yeah, time travel.
I'm torn, too. I mean, I think eventually we'll have the ability to achieve faster than light travel. I think that's, as I said before, just an engineering problem at
right.
this point. Whether it's, you know, creating the TARDIS or figuring out a device or some sort of exotic material that can hold a wormhole open without crushing us. You know, I think eventually we'll be able to achieve that speed. But I don't know. I mean, that makes me wonder, though, even if we could do that, is there something else that would prevent us from traveling back? Maybe, or forward. Maybe you can't do it. Maybe nothing happens. Maybe you hit the speed of light or you exceed the speed of light, and then that's it. I mean, there's just kind of that brick wall.
Yeah.
I just, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I'm like really torn between half of me thinking there's too many issues that would make it possible, but the other half looking at how far we have come with our technology and our progress and kind of thinking, well, I can't completely count it out. Because we look at, you know, 100 years ago, would we have ever imagined cell phones and things that we have now?
Think about this too, Marie. When you were a teenager and they had the steam-powered cars,
Tim, you're my witness.
Oh.
You heard that, didn't you?
Oh, I heard it.
Okay.
Bazinga. Okay, so did you ever think that there would be such things as laptops? Did you ever think there'd be such things as fiber optics and lasers and satellites? And
no, because I was too busy feeding my pterodactyls. I mean, I really...
Exactly. But that's my point. I mean...
No, I agree. That's why I say I'm torn, because half of me feels like...
Right. Exactly. As you were sitting there cranking your Model T, you probably never thought about the idea of an electric park vehicle, let alone a vehicle that runs 100% on electricity.
I never would have even imagined that I would have gotten off out of my horse and buggy, Larry.
You're right.
But I think beyond the digs at Murray, I agree with you that the technology advance is tremendous, but
it's coming. I mean, you know, look at what we've done and how quickly we're just progressing from one year to the next now. It's like insane. But at the same time,
it's hard to imagine.
Is it because is it those paradoxes that hint to yeah. us that this is something you're never going to, excuse me, be able to do?
Right. It's like you just, it's like we may.
You can't shapeshift.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You know, you, no matter how advanced we get technologically, we'll probably never be able to land a craft on the surface of the sun.
Right. Or a fly without, you know,
right.
type of gadgetry. You can't just jump off a coffee table and fly, as many of us learned as children, and Larry learned last night. But,
well, you sent me a lesson for tonight, so thank you.
So I think, you know, maybe there's just a sort of ultimate limitations.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's a reason for that, because if, you know, I mean, I don't mean to get all metaphysical and woo-woo, but I really think that in order to have a life that has purpose and meaning, there have to be some limitations.
Right.
We're supposed to learn certain things within a certain framework. Whether we advance beyond that after death, who knows? But I just, you know, like we talked about before, if we had an awareness of every other alternate reality and timeline out there, we'd go insane. We would never be able to focus on one long enough to, you know, do anything meaningful. We would just be like schizophrenics and multiple personality disorder and just nuts.
It would be like people who are, like, addicted to the Internet. They just go to, like, a billion sites a day. You know what I mean? It would be
but
like that.
And they have no real life of their own.
Exactly. So it's a – it's
Larry,
a,
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Fisticuffs tonight on the show.
And we really adore each other.
It's a conundrum. It's a real you know. Like I said, I applaud you guys for digging into this because, you know.
It's really a tough one because you watch 10 years from now, there will be time travel and more. And we'll be like, yeah, all right, okay, that we did it. I don't know. I'm just so torn when people ask me that. It's like, yeah, I think we can, but no, I don't think we can. Well, I know that doesn't make any sense, but.
Yeah. And to go back to the whole conspiracy theory thing, I just don't think, you know, if the government knew about time travel and everything, it goes back to the whole idea of how there'd be nobody in the present sort of thing. Like, maybe the government, let's put it this way. Maybe the government did figure out time travel, all right? And let's use Larry as an example. And so they draft Larry. Just this isn't – I'm not putting a dig on you, Larry. I'm just using – or Marie. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
But
okay.
So they grab Larry, and they're like, all right, you know, we got the time travel here. Come to this secret Air Force base. They put Larry in the thing. We're going to send you to, you know, the start of World War II to do – you know, maybe then Larry just never comes back.
Right.
You know, because you can't come back to the original timeline that you left.
Exactly.
So maybe after, like, they've lost, like, 4 dozen soldiers, the government's like, you know what?
This doesn't work.
Right. Like, time travel,
yeah.
You know, we've assassinated Hitler 40 times, but yeah. It didn't stop the war where we are, so.
Exactly. It didn't save any of those 6-7 million
right.
lives, you know. It yeah.
So, you know, like you say, where there's, you know, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe the government did figure out how to send somebody back in time, but you couldn't get them back, and you couldn't change
right.
the present. So,
exactly.
You know, I
it
think,
has,
I feel like.
It has no value then, and it has no, you know, there has to be a purpose for doing it.
Right.
Either to control other countries or to make a lot of money. So if it can't do either one of those things, they're just going to drop it. And it very well could be that they have technology that is a little more advanced than what we think. But still not enough to do time travel the way that the movies and the TV shows do it.
Here's a movie idea for you. Here's the scenario. The only way I see that even as feasible for the, you know, if the government has secret time travel and everything, all of a sudden they come out one day, they're like, listen, almost like this hurricane that just hit. They're like, listen,
right.
an asteroid's coming. You're all going to die.
Yeah.
But we have good news. We know how to time travel to other timelines, so... You know, form an orderly line.
Yeah, an orderly line.
And,
yeah, right.
You know, come down to your local library and we'll send you to a different time place because
right.
this timeline's about to blow up.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool idea.
That's the only way I see, you know, that I see disclosure of time travel even being, you know, possible or reasonable or plausible, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
If the government has some secret time travel technology.
It doesn't make any sense, because what are you going to do? Go back and change who won World War I? Well, you know, sorry, but that's not going to change this timeline. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So only as, almost like that Terra Nova movie, or show, you know, only as like an escape mechanism, I guess,
right,
is,
right.
The, is the real good reason for time travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. for like a theme park kind of thing.
Well, you can't come back though, see?
Yeah, if you hate your family, this is the theme park for you.
Exactly.
You won't come back.
Yeah, exactly. So now I have a James Lipton style question for you guys. So.
James Lipton?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, if you could go back to any time, what would it be and why?
Go ahead, Larry. You go first.
Have you guys been asked this one before? I figure that's probably one you've been asked like a million times.
Not a million times, but a few. We've asked other people, too, because we're interested in
yeah.
All right, Larry, you go first.
Mine definitely would be the pyramids. I definitely want to go back to ancient Egypt and actually see how that was, how that all went down. That'd be for sure mine.
I would go back to the 60s. And watch rock music just explode. And see, I grew up in the 60s, so I did get to see it. But I would love to relive the 60s again. I mean, it was, even though I was very, very young, the stuff that was going on was mind-blowing.
Literally.
With music, with you know, Vietnam. I mean, it was a ton
drugs.
Of history.
The drugs.
That was just unbelievable. Yeah, well,
great.
I mean, everything, though. I didn't do any.
Yeah.
Well, that...
Coming of age during the late 60s, early 70s was unbelievable.
See, now this...
I would go back to that.
All right.
I'd want to see it again. I'd want to be a little more observant than I was before.
Sober, you mean?
I was a kid.
Okay. I was just jumping on Larry's train of thought there.
Yeah, he's so mean to me, I swear.
Well, that brings up...
You know, in terms of history, I mean, there's not really another time period that fascinates me as much as, you know, than the more recent ones. I'd like to go see what Jesus was all about, clear up that mystery.
Hmm.
But, that's about it.
Well, the question kind of brings up a couple of interesting sort of theoretical avenues. This is definitely an episode of just sort of us just sitting around musing about this stuff, but... Like, let's use Larry's example. There's a couple of issues, I guess you could say, with this concept. If Larry's going to physically go back and see the pyramids, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's to say they're not, and let's just, sorry, Giorgio, let's just say that they're built by slaves, so, you know, we don't need to get into aliens and all that in this hypothetical scenario. Larry, you go back in time, you go to the pyramids. What's to stop them just from grabbing you and making you a slave?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
There's a danger, like I was thinking... you know,
go back like an It's a Wonderful Life or Christmas Carol where they don't see you.
Right. You have to have some kind of protection or like invisibility.
Just observing, yeah.
Right.
Because like I was thinking, you know, kind of like what Marie was saying about going back to the time of Jesus. It was like I'm thinking, well, it'd be kind of neat to go back to 1947 and see what happened at Roswell. But then it's like, well, all the pedestrians or regular people like Mac Brazel or whatever, they're all forced out of whatever happened. So even if you showed up from 2012 in the town of Roswell on the day before the crash and you're hanging around there in the desert and everything, you know you're going to get pushed out anyway. You're not going to be able to find out, you know, you get a little more information.
Right. You're still a civilian.
Right, exactly. So there's even those sort of paradoxes that go beyond a scientific paradox and just to... A sociological paradox, almost.
Right. And one of the things that we also talked about was that you think, well, I could just go back and observe. I won't do anything. But the act of observation is going to change the outcome of what happens. I mean, we know that to be true on a quantum level. And again, well, what if it's true on the bigger scale? So you're just going back to look could change everything.
Right. Well, that goes into...
That's really down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, because if you think about the theory that the UFOs are time travelers and stuff like that, it's like UFOs have influenced, you know, ancient battles and things like that. So it's... Even there's been influence, if they're
time
travelers.
That's probably the only quote-unquote kind of, excuse me, UFO conspiracy that I would buy into. That a lot of UFO sightings could very well be craft from advanced civilizations that are traveling back in time. I don't see why not, you know?
Yeah, and plus it answers sort of one of the critical questions of the UFOs, which is why don't they get involved?
Right.
You know, maybe it's regulated where they're not allowed to get involved.
Out, the paradox situation, yeah.
You know, they're like, you can go back and watch, but you can't get involved. So.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Oh, now my head hurts. I need some Advil.
Yeah.
So now you guys are working on this new book. Is there anything else on the time stuff we should talk about, or do you think we...
No, you know, I think I really... Think
we... Now, the only other thing that I noticed in the book from... this book is from the future. You didn't talk about Madman Markham at all, the time traveler that was sort of around in the 90s. Do you familiar with that story?
I don't remember that. Do you remember that story?
No, I never even heard that name.
Oh, you have to tell us.
I'll have to send you the link. Jason Offutt, I don't know if you guys know Jason at all, but he's done a tremendous amount of work looking at Madman Markham. And apparently he had some kind of – he was sort of working on a time machine and claims to have some stories about – you know, that he managed to travel in time. It was kind of like the John Teeter thing. It gained a following through coast to coast, and then he disappeared, and he's from the same area that Jason is, and Jason managed to track him down and sort of get more to the story.
They actually found a person who was claiming to be him, unlike the John Teeter.
Right. Jason's talked to him and met him, and he's you know, I guess it has a little more weight than the John Teeter story, but at the same time, it's certainly sort of obviously based on anecdotal evidence. So.
Right, because there is no proof. I mean, he never showed Jason, hey, look, I'm going to take you back to, you know, 1922.
Right. I think the closest thing he was traveling into the future, but I don't know exactly. I don't recall the story off the top of my head. I just didn't know if you guys had looked at it.
No, that was one we missed. Darn.
Well, I was glad you included the Charlie Chaplin one in there, because...
Yeah, that's, you know, everything, it just went viral.
Well, like the thing that we were saying about how these don't hold water and everything, it's like, why didn't... If someone in the past has a cell phone, it's not going to work anyway, so what are they, you know,
exactly.
Recording their thoughts?
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, that's the kind of maddening thing, where it's like, you see people go crazy about it, and then it's like... Stop for a minute and think.
People think, do you even think before you believe something just because you saw it go viral on Facebook or the internet?
Yeah. It's like, this would be awesome if it was true, but there's no infrastructure for a cell phone in the 1920s.
Exactly. Yeah. Who would she be talking to?
We all know that was a man in drag. Come on.
That's what Larry said, that he thought it was.
What it looks like.
I think that goes into the whole, like, that it's... It's like it's gaining momentum, and then people have to throw in even weirder twists to it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I think it's a time travel, but I also think it's a man dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, so what, he's trying not to draw attention to himself, so he dresses in drag? That doesn't even... Well, like, why? Who are these people that are putting these things out there? I don't know.
They just have nothing better to do.
But goddamn, they entertain us.
They
so.
Do. Exactly. We need people that have nothing better to do.
Now, where can folks pick up This Book Is From the Future? I take it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and anywhere fine books are sold?
Anywhere fine books are sold, as opposed to not fine books, yes.
Exactly. Right. Well, I picked it up at Barnes & Noble, so.
Yeah, well, they are really good to us. We really like Barnes & Noble.
Well, thank God they're still hanging in there after all these other places.
I can't believe it. Yeah, they're just falling by the wayside. It's sad.
The secret to Barnes & Noble is you can sit and read the book.
And have coffee.
Right. I used to go to Borders all the time. They kind of discouraged that. So it was that's why they went under. Anyway, so what's going on now? I'm going to sort of hit you with some random stuff here as we head in towards the end. Now, last time we had you on the show, you were talking about this movie, 19 Hertz, the movie. It was sort of percolating. So what's the status
it's
on 19 Hertz?
It's still percolating. Yeah, we're learning quick how the film industry works. So we have another project that we did called Aurora. Nothing to do with the shooting, by the way. It's a science fiction. And just hoping that they will get picked up and funded and plug it along in the meantime. Just signed a new book deal with a new publisher.
Oh.
We're working now with Hierophant, which is a part of Hampton Roads.
Nice.
Huge company.
Yeah. Is
on
this...
On the grid, which we have now exactly 4 months to write.
Oh, boy.
I know. I'm counting down the days. Like, oh, my God. But it's a big one, I hope.
This is the reality book?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it just kind of really brings together everything that Larry and I have been working towards over the last 5 years that we've been working together.
Mm-hmm.
because we've written about it in every book, practically little bits and pieces as we've discovered things. So we're trying to really formulate our theory of how we perceive reality and other levels of reality and how we may be interacting. Again, what goes on physiologically? What goes on environmentally? What is that perfect stew that allows you to have an experience of another reality?
Of another reality?
Well, even our own. I mean, you know, even the reality that we're in. Is it just the brain? Are we just, you know, structured to perceive what we perceive? Is everything different for everyone, and yet we also have a collective reality that we all buy into?
I think that's what's going on. Well, it's interesting because it almost feels like reality is getting more fractured as time goes by. Because back in the day before the internet came along, it's like information intake, if you will, you know, like
overload.
It was,
absolutely.
Well, you only really had a small amount of available information
from
the media. Now there's so much information that there are people, like we talk about these conspiracy folks. There are people operating in different realms of reality. Their reality is completely different from what our reality is.
And yet we have a collective reality.
Exactly.
Well, we agree that a chair is a chair and a dog is a dog and red is red. But, you know, how fluid and flexible is personal reality? We can create a lot of it. We each can see red, but we might see it a little bit differently based upon our experiences. That's kind of what we want to look at, but really from the point of view that this isn't the only level of reality. And we are constantly getting little glimpses into these other levels. And how does that happen? Why does it happen to one person, maybe not another?
Interesting. This sounds like a difficult
Larry,
book to tackle.
Does that kind of sound right?
You summed it up.
Larry, are you excited about this new project?
Very, yeah. I think this will be our biggest one probably yet.
Biggest in length or just biggest in impact or biggest in work? Obviously, I feel like that's probably definitely the case. But
work and impact, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's far greater implications of this of our work on this book, I think, than probably any of the other ones. And like Murray said, I think we've been kind of building up to this. This is kind of the grand finale. Not really the finale, but the kind of the biggie.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Where do you go from there? What do you tackle after reality?
We have other ideas.
Well, yeah.
But at the same time, this is going to be more of an introduction to this theory and all the different aspects of it. And we're hoping that as time goes on, we're going to be expanding on it. We're going to be doing research and investigations and just getting more backup information from other people that are out there also looking into similar theories. And so it's kind of might be an ongoing thing, but we need to present the foundation of the grid first. So that's what we're going to do.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, Larry, you want to write more books after this, or are we going to call it quits?
I don't know. After this, let's time travel, go to a different timeline and start over.
Take your books with you and then, just like pump them out really fast, like how Tupac had all those albums that came out.
Yeah, exactly. That would be nice, huh?
Now, are you still getting a lot of interest in the 11/11 thing? Because I see they really push it here on this book is from the future. It says authors of 11/11. But that must have been a big book then.
It was. I mean, that was our biggest book together. It was
for
huge,
sure.
And it was probably the last book we would have thought would have been so big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a topic that a lot of people have an interest in, and there's really no avenue to go to find out more about it. So.
Right. Well, we had no idea when we decided to do it that there was even anything that big to it. It was very surprising, and the response, and excuse me, I still think the most people that we meet, that's the book that they mention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about that book you wrote, Marie? It's almost coming time for the big end of the Mayan calendar.
You know what? That was, for me personally, my biggest book. And it's kind of a drag. It's like the shelf life is, you know, one more month and then boom, it's over. But no, that was a great book for me. And the funny thing is that I had just connected with Larry during that time.
Yeah.
And we had decided, you know, the next thing we do, let's do together. And so he actually helped me with a ton of the research for 2013.
Oh.
And does not get any credit for that. But
Larry, you're a good egg.
I mean, he was sending me links and helping me with stuff as I was writing it. And, yeah, that's been a huge book for me. I'm kind of sad to see it go, but, you know, on to new things. Always on to new things.
Well, I think it'll be looked back upon as a key sort of piece.
Hey,
of,
there's still some stuff in there that's coming true every day, you know, the realistic stuff that I wrote about.
Well, it's interesting, too, that I've found it intriguing that there was all this furor sort of leading up to December 21st, 2012, but it seemed like once we got into 2012, I really haven't heard much about it this year.
No, it's totally died down.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Nobody's talking about it.
I mean, I don't know if it's like the election or just the random sort of weird stuff that's been happening this year, like the shooting and now the hurricane and the
you know
thing,
what I
you know,
think it is?
I don't know what it is.
I think most people expected really awful, horrendous things like asteroid impacts and super volcanoes and, you know, men from Mars to land leading up to it. And because those things have not happened, they're interested, you know, people get distracted easily.
Right.
Yeah.
Their interest is elsewhere. Now they're onto the whole ancient alien thing.
You sound like you're not a fan.
I do think there's some validity to the theory, but I think it's kind of, I don't know, to blame every single thing in our past on aliens. I'm not, definitely don't go down that road.
Right.
No, I am. I enjoy the show. I'm a fan of those ideas, those theories. I mean, Larry and I got the opportunity to hear Eric Von Daniken speak in Minneapolis, and that was mind-blowing.
I find ancient astronauts interesting.
Yeah, it is. I'm more focused on the present and future. I think, you know, I'm really intrigued by the past, but at some point, I realize I need to shift my focus back to the present.
Right, because you can't really do anything about it, so it's like, that would be interesting, but...
Yeah.
Unless
it tells
something
us maybe
changes.
Who we are, where we came from, but it still doesn't solve the problems of today, you know, tomorrow, so...
Yeah, or the big question of why we're here in the first place, you know, what...
Yeah.
Although I've said to people, I think that, you know, what you guys do and what I do and what the serious-minded people in this field do, I honestly believe that that is why we're here, to sort of ask the question why we're here.
Sure.
And a lot of most people don't do that.
Yeah.
So that's why they're sort of yearning for the answer.
Right. And, I mean, I do want to know what my heritage, my genetic background is. If there was alien intervention, sure, I'd love to know that. But I also want to know how I can work with that now. And how that can help the future, because really, you know, if we don't get our proverbial crap together, there won't be a future, whether we're alien, human, or half and half.
Right. Well, the world's in a precarious position, so it's interesting.
Right.
Now, Larry, are you still involved with our past and doing the ghost hunting?
Absolutely.
How's that going?
Well, it's good. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, the paranormal to me is I would say on the decline. I mean, I'm trying to be very politically correct here. I mean, I think I've found the answers that I've been looking for. So I think my motivation is not quite as strong as it once was. But I mean, I still do it, certainly. I mean, we use our past, Ray and I use our past as kind of a testing grounds for a lot of the research that we do. So we look at things from the practical perspective or the realistic field perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the actual ghost hunting part of it, you know, really, I hate to say it, but I'm kind of over it. I mean,
how many ghosts can you hunt? not find any.
Right. I think, I don't know if it was you guys I talked about this with. I think it was actually, because that's when I said squadouche. But, I had a similar conversation with some guys that are paranormal investigators on a recent show. And, you know, we've reached a wall of sorts with this ghost hunting thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Very much,
you know.
Yeah.
And if people want to go out and have fun, let them. I don't care about that. But it's like...
Free country,
From someone who's trying to figure all this out, I'm at my saturation point as far as information
totally.
And insights.
Yeah. And that's why we like to write about things that to other people may not seem paranormal, but they really are. I mean, we're just taking it further out than just running around and looking for spirits.
Right.
Or orbs.
Well, I think that the books that you guys write are, I think they're critical reading for anyone who's a serious student of the paranormal, because they really lay the groundwork for so much of the tentpole subjects.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, because
and our most ignored book, The Resonance Key. I just mean ignored, not ignored, but maybe overlooked because people don't understand it. But that's probably the most important book that anybody in the paranormal could read because, you know, resonance has been offered as a potential explanation for everything, for so many things. And I don't know, it's just, you know, people just tend to overlook, excuse me, things that they don't really get. And they'll go read the next, you know, how to tweak your equipment book.
Yeah.
You know.
Yikes.
How to get a deal on a millimeter, but they don't want to know what's behind what it is that they're hunting. What right. What could be causing it or interacting with it and blah, I don't know.
Right.
It's frustrating, but, you know, we do what we do. We put it out there.
Well, I thought, I was reminded of you guys, actually. I was watching, I think it was last week's episode of Big Bang Theory, where he had the hologram and of a pencil, and then it was like he showed a hologram of the Earth, and he was like, some people think that the universe is actually one big hologram. And I was like, I learned that from Marie and Larry's book.
Yeah.
I think Larry is Sheldon.
Yeah. Larry, you Sheldon.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Larry rides motorcycles. He can't be Sheldon.
Trying, I'm
well,
too
he's
cool.
He's a cool Sheldon.
Yeah.
All right. So, what's the name of this new book? And you said it's due in 4 months. So, when do you expect it to be available for me to put my grimy little hands on?
It's supposed to be released fall of 2013, and I think the tentative title as of now is "The Grid: Exploring the Hidden Infrastructure of Reality," but that will probably change.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. How far along are you?
Larry.
Yeah, just starting.
Yeah.
But just the acknowledgments part.
No, I mean, no, we've been doing the research for a long time.
Yeah,
right?
We've
so
had
writing
a, I know.
Down, I mean.
And you know what? Things keep getting in the way. I mean, we've had events. Larry's got a bunch of events, and we really, you know, now that it's a new month, it's November. Now it's time to just get cracking.
Right, right. Well, now, Larry, you said you're heading out on a trip soon. This episode definitely won't drop by the time you make that trip. But do you have any big events coming up? And how are you finding the convention circuit? Because I know you guys were in Minneapolis recently.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
Awesome.
Actually, I'm going to a conference tomorrow. I'm leaving for one in Jefferson, Texas. Then the weekend after that, I'm speaking at Memphis Comic Con. What else? I'm looking on my calendar. And then I've got a metaphysical conference I'm doing December 12,
12,
12.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's really it. That's all I've got through the end of the year. I'm trying to wind down some. It's been crazy. Between Marie and I think, you know, neither one of us have had many weekends free to do anything. I mean,
yeah, and we got to get this book done.
We've got to get the book done, and we've got a lot of other projects that are on the back burner that we want to tackle as well.
But we do want to say that the Paradigm Symposium in Minneapolis was off the hook. It was
pretty awesome.
It was amazing. The speakers, the people, the there were close to, I think, 500 people.
Wow, nice.
The quality of the event itself. I mean, everything down to the food and just the presentation, everything was fantastic. And, you know, just seeing some really mind-blowing people like Eric Von Daniken and Dr. John Ward and us. And, you know, we made a lot of good, great friends. We got to actually meet our publishers, New Page Books, for the first time.
Oh, nice.
Which was interesting, even though we're now working with a new publisher. But Scotty Roberts and Micah Hanks and Rainey Roberts kicked ass. They, three of them, really put this together. And I don't know. I mean, it was really amazing. We've only done a few together. Hopefully we'll be doing more. And we do a lot of things separately. And one of the things that Larry has been hearing a lot and I've been hearing is just that, the more paranormal-oriented conferences are really struggling.
Yeah.
And again, it's that whole ghost thing. It's kind of getting a little lame. But this was Ancient Aliens, and we talked about time travel. It fit right in. Just the idea of, you know, changing paradigms.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think for us, we're going to be looking for more events that are not necessarily quote-unquote paranormal.
Right, right, right. Well, it's a very sort of difficult sort of market.
It's too closed.
Right.
They, you know, Larry has this Jefferson event, and he has free reign to talk about whatever he wants, despite the fact that it's a paranormal conference. But a lot of them, they just want you to talk about ghost hunting. I mean, don't you find that, Larry? The more paranormal.
Yeah, and it's so annoying because it seems to me like most of the people that go to those things, I mean, I hate to say it, but they're extremely closed-minded. You would think that the people that attend paranormal conferences would, by nature, be very open-minded individuals, but I actually find that that's not the case at all.
Right.
Case in point, I have a presentation that I do about orbs, and invariably, you know, some idiot will come up to me, and, you know, after I've presented an hour and 15-minute scientific explanation of what orbs are, very detailed scientific explanation of what orbs are, invariably some douchebag will come up to me afterwards and refute everything that's in there and tell me that it's actually spirits, and when I ask them how they know that, well, I just know that.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. Did you listen to any of my presentation at all?
What are you speaking on this weekend?
Time travel.
Are you?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty safe.
But, for the most part, the paranormal conferences, I enjoy going to them, but I don't enjoy going to them. I mean, it's one of those things, it's kind of I hate to say it's a necessary evil for what we do, but,
right.
I mean, it just seems for the most part, I'm not saying every paranormal conference is like this, but it just seems like many of them, I'll put it that way, are so focused and so singular on the ghost aspect. Mm-hmm. Of it, that if you try to tackle anything else, I mean, you see eyes glaze over, you see people that just really don't have either a level of interest or high enough of a level of education to understand what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
It is. I mean, it is.
I find, because I mostly go to UFO events, personally, I just can't stand talking shop outside of when you're sort of working the event.
Right.
You know, it's like if I'm out at the bar and I'm having a beer, the last thing I want is to talk about UFOs with people. But that, you know, and I don't blame them because this is their...
Right, that's what they're there to talk about.
Right,
exactly.
But it's like invariably they're like, well, what do you think's going on?
Right.
And it's like, what's going on is I'm watching the Red Sox and I'm having a beer, so...
And I'm having a beer,
Like, leave me alone. I once, some guy was like bothering me once and I was like, well, what do you do for a living? And he was like, you know, well, I work in trucking. And he said, that doesn't really matter. And I was like, well, it doesn't matter what I do for a living either. So just
exactly.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm the curmudgeon of the conference circuit. So.
I'm kind of like that, too. It's like I can handle a day, and then after that I'm sort of itching to, you know, let's go just hang out and have fun. And
Right. And it's sort of like, I know it's like a figure of speech where it's like, well, if you get them at the bar, then they'll tell you the really interesting stuff. But it's like, like, listen, I'm not going to gossip with you. So, you know, unless you're like a friend of mine, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Give you the lowdown.
Yeah. I don't want to deal with people who are like, what's this person really like?
Yeah. Oh, they're such a douchebag.
Yeah.
Quote me on that.
Yeah. It's like, let me tell you all about it so you can write about it on your fucking blog.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus, get the hell out of here.
Oh,
anyway, on that curmudgeon-y note.
On that note.
Yes. The website is paraexplorers.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Excellent. And the new book is, this book is from the future. As we said, you can get it all over the place, and they got a new book coming out next fall. Keep me posted on 19 Hertz.
Absolutely.
I'm always available for extra work. You know that.
Oh, you could, there you go. I have a role for you, okay.
Yeah, I could be like Pee Wee's Big Adventure. I can be like paging Mr. Flaxman, Mr. Flaxman.
You'd be the gopher. Fetch me a donut.
Oh, God. But it's been great. I love the conversation tonight, and it's always just so much fun talking to you guys. I wouldn't even say it's like talking to two old friends. It is talking to two old friends.
Exactly.
You guys have been.
Go back.
I was stunned. I was looking at it today to see when Marie was first on the show, because I had her on before I had Larry on. Marie, you were on all the way back in season two, back probably, I think, like 6-7 years ago at this point.
Oh, my
God. So it's unbelievable. And
I am old.
and Larry, you're right there the following season in season three. So, I mean, you guys have been on just countless times,
man.
And huge supporters of this show, and I appreciate
it. Time has passed.
Yeah.
Time has passed, and, you know, thanks to your fine work, we've covered just so many different interesting aspects of the esoteric. So I really appreciate it. And
well, you're always one of our favorites.
No.
So we get to just be ourselves.
That's all I ask. That's all I ask. Yeah. And you guys always bring the goods. So thank you very much for coming back on the show. And I'd say let's keep in touch, but I know we will. So best of luck in 2013. We'll ride through the storm of the Mayan calendar together, and we'll all get back together again.
On the other side.
Yep, on the other side in Season 8.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman for coming back on the show and giving us so much time. You can find out more from them at www.paraexplorers.com. Pretty simple, all one word. Paraexplorers.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, normally it is time for the BOA Audio Listener Feedback segment of the program, but because this episode is tremendously late, we are going to skip BOA Audio Listener Feedback this week and bring it back on the next edition of the program. So let me run through the means for you to contact me if you would like to be featured here in a future installment of the program. You can head on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L ofamerica.com, and click the contact button. Or simply write to boaaudio@hotmail.com. And if you want something a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, the US of E.com, theusofe.com. It is BOA's paranormal playground. Lots of discussion on the world of esoterica and pop culture at the US of E. And if you can't manage to get that whole jumbled URL together, just head on over to Banal of America and click the forum button. Additionally, I am on Twitter and Facebook, so if you'd like to find me on there, just punch in Banal, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. That'll bring up my profiles. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. And finally, if you've not done so yet, please check out and like Banal of America on Facebook. That's where you can find some exclusive stuff from BOA and also heads up fresh news on the program and the website before it is released anywhere else. You can find that simply by punching in Banal of America in Facebook. And for those folks who are keeping score at home, we are up to 847 likes. So we're still a bit of a ways away from the mythical 1,000 likes. So if you are listening to this and you have not yet liked us on Facebook, you can help us get towards the hump. Maybe not over the hump yet, but definitely towards the hump by liking us on Facebook. Those are the means to get in touch with me if you want to be featured here on BOA Audio Listener Feedback, or if you just want to send me your thoughts on the program. If you don't want me to read it on the air, feel free to let me know and I will exclude it from the mailbag, but I will definitely read it nonetheless. So shoot me a line if you have thoughts on the program. I'm always interested in hearing from the BOA Audio listeners. And speaking of BOA Audio listeners, I've got a little something special here for the listeners at the end of the program. I encourage you all to stay tuned to the very, very end of this edition of the show, because we have a treat in store for us from BOA Audio listener Sherry Compton Myers. She's a longtime listener of the program and has recently written the book of Seraphim and Cherubim. And it sounds tremendous. Let me read you the book description for of Seraphim and Cherubim. Monster, Phantom, Ghost. Eric Kunstler, the legendary Phantom of the Opera, still wanders the streets of Paris after sunset. Alone for over 100 years, tired of his half-life spent in the shadows, and desperate to end his pain, he makes his way out one October night to end it all in the Sign. This is the story of what and who changed his mind, his heart, and his life. You can find out more about Of Seraphim and Cherubim at the website, ofseraphimandcherubim.com. And as I said, stay tuned to the very end because Sherry has graciously supplied us with a nearly 2-minute audio promo for Of Seraphim and Cherubim, asked if I would run it here at the end of the program, and I am more than happy to help out a BOA audio listener, especially when they've put the kind of work in to write their own book. So stay tuned to the very end when I wish you well and tell you you'll be hearing from me on the next edition of the program. Shortly thereafter, the audio promo for Of Seraphim and Cherubim will begin. Sit back, enjoy it, and check out the new book Of Seraphim and Cherubim from BOA Audio listener Sherry Compton Myers. Up next, it's time to thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. Since the last time you heard from me, we've got an all-new Esotericana from Tina Senna titled Of Gods and Monsters and the Things Unknown. Additionally, Leslie has an all-new Gray Matters titled A Light in the Night. So two new columns from the BOA staff. Additionally, we are sitting on an all-new piece from Richard Thomas. We should have that up soon. So if you've not stopped by Banal of America to check out the new offerings from the BOA staff, you are definitely missing out. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Now comes the time in the program where I turn to you, the BOA listeners, and ask you to help us out by making a donation. How do you do that? That's simple. There are two ways to do so. Head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. That's on the left-hand side of the screen. That will take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It is safe, secure, and simple. But what if you don't trust the internet and still want to help out Banal of America? There is a way you can do so. We have a P.O. Box. The address for that is Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass., 01866. And you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. You can find the complete address at Banal of America underneath the PayPal button. And if you mail us a donation, please make it payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America, because my bank is anal and they will not honor those donations. And also, please include some form of correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for your donation. As always, it bears repeating, my friends, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of BOA Audio, you probably do not even need me to give you the preview, folks, because I'm looking at the calendar right now. It is December 9th. We are really a little over 2 weeks away from Christmas, which means it is time once again, my friends, for the BOA Audio Holiday Special. Not just any BOA Audio Holiday Special, though, of course. It is the 8th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special featuring the incomparable Stanton Friedman. Beyond the Holiday Special, what do we have cooking here at Banal of America? A lot of good stuff, folks. Because, as you know, we close the book on the year with our annual Year in Review episode with our good buddy Greg Bishop. And I have an inkling that the annual Year in Review episode may give us the opportunity to launch the first ever edition of Banal of America live. So you may be listening to the Year in Review episode live as it happens with Greg Bishop. Stay tuned for more information on that. And we've still got a tremendous 3-hour conversation with longtime BOA friend Paul Kimball that remains in the till. That will be coming at you shortly, I hope. And additionally, this past week I taped an episode of the program for 2013 with a guest who shall remain nameless for now, but he's never appeared on the program before. And the moment I hung up the phone, I said to myself, that was another BOA Audio Classic. So we've got an absolutely unforgettable edition of the program coming at you in the new year. So a lot of stuff here from Banal of America. Stay tuned, my friends, because the party continues through 2012 and into 2013. Beginning, of course, next time on the program, the 8th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special featuring Stanton Friedman. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Once again, big, big thanks to Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman. And, of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners. I hope you're enjoying your holiday season so far. Stay tuned for holiday goodness from Banal of America coming very, very soon. And, as always, thank you for your unending support of this program and for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.
It has been 130 years since the strange events at L'Opera Garnier, 110 years since the voice of Divina Dae was silenced by death. Still, there are nights when it is wise, messieurs, to walk with your hand at the level of your eyes. For his arm is not weakened, and his aim is still true.
See what reviles them all. See why you cannot have companionship. See, Eric, remember.
That was the mask I pitied, Eric. Never the one I could see, but the one over your heart.
What will he do when he meets a woman for whom the mask and the legends hold no fear? Who will stand and face him, even at his worst? No classic beauty, no divine voice, but a power to be reckoned with in her own right. And what will happen when their life together, just beginning, is threatened?
They will take the cost. She is mine, and no one will take her from me. No one!
Of Serubin and Cherubim, an alternative tale of the Phantom of the Opera by Sherry Compton Myers, coming in December 2012. For more details, updates, and sneak peeks, go to www.ofseraphimandcherubim.com.
There is no music without you, Sarah.